Why haven't we seen full adoption of automation yet in the networking industry? I mean, it's been years since we started down this road, over a decade, maybe more. So with me today is Chris Grundemann, co-founder of the Network Automation Forum and the AutoCon events held twice a year, focused on, you guessed it, network automation, and even more specifically, trying to answer that very question of why it hasn't been fully adopted yet. Chris's response to that question is interesting. It's less technical than you'd think. This is a great episode today and really top of mind for me just a couple weeks after AutoCon 4 in October 2025. My name is Philip Gervasi, and this is Telemetry Now. Chris, thanks so much for joining today's show. So I've known you for a long time, but we never have had much of an opportunity to sit down and just chat for a while. I was on your podcast once a while back, a few years ago now. Yeah. So I am really looking forward to talking today. Yes, about the Network Automation Forum and AutoCon, but also just talk tech and where we are in the industry right now. Now, I know, I'm going to guess at least, that most of our audience, being networking nerds, probably know who you are. But for those that might not, would you give a little bit of a background, a little intro for yourself, or whatever you're comfortable sharing?
Yeah, sure. So, I'm a network engineer by trade and have definitely veered off onto many adjacent paths over the course of my career since then, since starting out. I got my real start about 20 years ago at the turn of the century. I just like finding ways to weave in turn of the century into conversations these days. The first network I built, we actually built with software because we didn't know any better. This was, early 2000s, and so things like Zebra and Quagga and Bird and some of the virtual routing engines that are open source available now were either just getting started or weren't quite available yet, and definitely I didn't know about them. And so we ended up writing our own router OS, which sounds much more grandiose than it is. It was essentially a bunch of Perl scripts that called IP tables and stood up static routes and NAT rules. But it's definitely been very interesting that from that kind of beginning, then I dove into, more kind of real service provider networks in kind of jobs at bigger companies and learned about, real routers and switches and networking and that kind of stuff. And to see it kind of come back full circle where, I've been watching for the last 10 plus years, ever since OpenFlow came out and kind of really made waves, been watching the network automation space and how that's evolved. And then definitely in the last 2 years, since Scott Robon and I started the Network Automation Forum, I've had front row seats to this kind of revolution of network automation, of really applying software to networking, which in a lot of ways for me kind of feels like coming back to the beginning and starting over, which is great. So that's me. I mean, in the middle there, I worked for the Internet Society. I worked for several service providers. I spent a lot of time flying around the world talking about technology. I've built some networks. I got to write some patents, wrote a couple books, and an IETF RFC. And so you may have seen my name around there, as Phil mentioned, but also a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, too.
Yeah, you've been busy for the past 20 years, huh? And it is interesting that you started off with software and not with, just racking and stacking gear. And then after the fact, maybe I could do this a little bit more efficiently. You flipped that whole thing on its head. So that's really neat. I didn't know that about you. It's interesting. I'm thinking about 2015, 2014, 2016, right in there, those couple years. That's when everybody in the networking industry, as far as, my memory, that's when everybody started talking about network automation. And, you started hearing about network engineers learning Python. That's the first time I ever heard of Ansible. I didn't know what that was prior to that and things like that. So really, really interesting how it's been 10 years now that we've been having this conversation. Now, I know that the conversation started much, much earlier than that. You talked about Perl scripts literally decades ago. The turn of the century, if you will. When you said that, I'm like, yeah, 1903? How old are you, man? That's crazy. I did see a meme the other day that said 30 years ago, the early 70s. And then you do the math and you're like, no, that was the mid-90s.
Right.
So I can't compute that yet. Tell me a little bit about the Network Automation Forum. We have had Scott, you mentioned, your partner at the Network Automation Forum, on once or twice now to talk about it. But I'd like to hear your perspective. Tell me how that started, why that started, what the goal is.
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, the real mechanics of how it started was Scott and I both saw this need. I think we both had a common client. We both do consulting and contracting work, and we both had a common client who was looking to do like a user forum for their product. And we both independently were talking to this person and said, hey, what makes more sense is to build a big tent, do an automation conference, and be one of the sponsors and bring in other vendors and make it vendor neutral instead of trying to, you know, start a user forum from scratch. It seems more likely to be successful if you really look at this holistically. And that company and that individual weren't really interested in that, but having heard it from both of us said, hey, you two guys should talk. And we did. I think Scott had seen the first version of the State of Network Automation survey. I had known people who know Scott. Scott knows so many people through all of his training and SE time and all that stuff. Yeah. So I'd definitely known of Scott. And then we met for the first time at a NANOG meeting, actually, and kind of sat down and said, hey, you know, can we do this? Can we pull this off? Luckily, we were both entrepreneurial enough or dumb enough to say, yeah, let's do it. Let's roll the dice. And, you know, I think this was July or so of 2023, and we went ahead and pulled the trigger, signed a contract with a hotel for a conference in November of 2023, and decided to see if there was a community there that wanted to get together. And lucky for everyone involved, I think there was, right? It definitely played out bigger than I would have ever expected, right? And I think, you know, the way I think about it is essentially, you know, we lit a fire and looked around, and it turned out there was a bunch of people standing around in the dark, right? And I think people have now come to gather around this campfire and talk about network automation, and things definitely for me have advanced very rapidly. I don't know if the industry has advanced as rapidly as it seems like it from my seat, but I definitely understand what modern network operations using automation should look like so much clearer than I did 2 years ago, right? I had a kind of an inkling of what automation was. I had my own opinions about it, but now having, again, this front row seat to the experts in the field really coming and talking about what they're doing, seeing the conversations on Slack, like I feel like I now really get it. And I think that's happened for a lot of people. So I'm really excited about kind of the success of this community coming together and sharing information so openly.
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying that even you, as the event organizer, who, you know, I've seen you at these events, you're running around like crazy, you know, coordinating and putting out fires and whatever you have to do. Proverbial fires, right?
Yeah. Luckily, no real fires so far.
Yeah, luckily. you know, but what you're saying is that you've actually, like, learned a tremendous amount specifically from these events and advanced your own knowledge and understanding of network automation just from attending these AutoCon events.
Right? A ton, yeah. And I would say it's definitely split. I mean, definitely at the events themselves, there's a huge kind of high bandwidth information download from both the presentations and then the people in the hallways and in the bars afterwards talking about the presentations, but also from the Slack channel. You know, there's a few thousand people who are on there, and some of them are quite active, and there's debates that rage from time to time. And between the two, yeah, I've gotten a really clear picture, I think, of how we should be doing this.
So then, you know, we're talking about network automation. What's the actual goal of the conference? Is it just to get around and talk about automation and, like, what are you using? What are you doing? Or what's the underlying impetus for starting the conference in the first place?
Yeah.
You know, obviously you talked about community a couple times, so getting folks together to talk and professional development and learn, I get that. But what is the overarching goal for Network Automation Forum?
Yeah. So we kind of founded it with a question of, why aren't we, well, I think what we said is, why haven't we seen full adoption of network automation yet? Exactly as you kind of open this up, right? We've been talking about this for at least 10 years, probably longer. If you look at service writers, right? Service writers, you know, have been doing some kind of scripting in the network for a long time, right? It just was required for big networks to get stuff done. Enterprises have come around to it a little bit more recently, I think. And it depends on how you classify hyperscalers. Are they enterprises? Are they service providers? What are they? I guess they're hyperscalers. They've been doing this for a while as well. But it's not everyone. It's not everywhere. And so that question kind of bubbled up of like, okay, well, why not? You know, when OpenFlow came out, I think it was 2012, it made a huge splash across the industry. And people kind of were screaming that everything was going to change. It was a big kind of hype around that. And then it kind of petered out. There was definitely some companies, some vendors who put OpenFlow into their products and things. My realization at the time, being so totally confused by it at first and then kind of digging into it and understanding it, I was lucky enough to be working at a think tank at the time. And so got some to spend some really time like digging into like, what is this SDN thing? And my conclusion was people want to automate their networks. I don't think that people really cared too much about the separation of control plane and data plane, which was kind of the SDN claim to fame. But what I realized was people did want to automate, right?
So you're really talking about more of an operational focus then. Automate as in the sense of like do things better, run the networks better. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think so. Yeah. And it does bleed into like design and architecture and things like that to be able to build a well automated network. It also blends into things like organizational culture and organizational structure, which is pretty cool.
So I want to ask you what the answer to that question is, that hypothetical question, or maybe it was a literal question that you asked folks at AutoCon Zero. I remember I was there in Denver a couple of years ago. But before we do, we just had AutoCon 4. I was there, so I say we, but you just had AutoCon 4 in Austin, Texas.
That's right.
I don't want to get too much into a recap. I know the videos are going to be on YouTube soon, but tell me a little bit about your perspective there. How have things changed? How is AutoCon 4, for you? But also, how have things progressed now? We're looking at AutoCon, we started with zero, so that's five events now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one kind of, obvious fact, I guess, is just the growth of the events. I think, the first AutoCon Zero, about 340 people showed up, which was mind-boggling at the time that this many people showed up when we had announced this thing, a few months before. But AutoCon 4 in Austin, as you said, just a few weeks ago, had over 700 folks show up for the conference. In that time, we've also added workshops. So now there's 2 days before the event where we do hands-on workshops. There's now 16 different half-day workshops, so four at a time during four time blocks. This AutoCon 4, we also added in a separate track. So we did an advanced track, which honestly, I don't think hit the mark. And we're going to kind of go back to the drawing board on that and try and find some better ideas around content for that piece of it. We also had a leadership track, which I think did hit the mark and really provided some good insights into how to manage up and manage teams and that kind of stuff and how to look at this from a more business perspective. So just overall, the community, the people who show up has grown and the event itself has grown quite a bit. Also, we've gotten a lot better at it, I think. This was not only the biggest event, but it felt the smoothest. That's maybe very, very selfish and personal because I think hopefully no one else sees all the rough edges. But I think Scott and I were way less stressed out this time than we have been ever before. So that was great. Yeah.
I mean, I was there as an attendee and a workshop presenter. Mm-hmm. So I did not notice any of those rough edges. I thought it was great. I will say that I discovered probably the best tacos in my life around the corner. And that was, I mean, yes, all of the presentations were amazing and meeting up with folks was amazing. But as somebody who enjoys really good food, that was really special. And I think in the Slack, I mentioned it a couple times. And by the end of that week, I mean, I don't know how many people ended up going to visit that taco place around the corner. So, I say that in jest because, one of the things that I love about conferences in general, AutoCon or not, is connecting with folks, the hallway conversations and all that kind of thing. And, what I noticed about AutoCon is that, sure, there's this, focus on network automation, on tools and resources and architecture and all these kind of things. You just mentioned a leadership track. So even bringing it out of the pure technical conversation into some of the how does this relate to the business and to management and the people conversation. But also there's like the birds of a feather meetups that happen every single morning. There's the folks that are all getting together to go to that, NAF-sponsored social event that's happening afterwards. So those are all very, very important, very special to me, just in making those connections that, selfishly that help advance my career because I get to know people and build my own network, people network, not, IP network. And also, connect other people. I'm always looking for like, can I record a podcast with this person? Mm-hmm. Is there a blog post, hidden in this content right now? So that I think that's been a huge benefit for me attending personally.
Absolutely. And I think that definitely gets to the root of, I think, why AutoCon has been so successful in general is, yes, it really is a community event, right? And I cut my teeth. I grew up kind of in the industry going to NANOGS, the North American Network Operators Group meetings, also ARIN meetings. And then when I worked for the Internet Society, I ended up getting to go to NOGs all over the world. I helped start some NOGs around the world. And we really tried to kind of model that, very community-focused, very practitioner-focused approach to conferences for AutoCon. And I think we've done pretty well. And luckily there's a great community there that really has kind of jumped in and known all the right things to do and how to socialize and how to network and how to take advantage of these things. Because I do think that those, going out for breakfast burritos, going out to grab tacos at lunch, grabbing food at the social event or the happy hour, maybe some drinks even, after hours is is just as important as the presentations, right? I think, you know, there's something that somebody probably said something very smart about, you know, learning only happens with reflection, right? So you can watch a presentation. If you don't then sit down and think about it and work through it, I don't know that you've learned as much as with that discussion, right? And so if you can see a presentation and then talk to five other really smart people about what they saw in the presentation and see these different perspectives and different understandings, and they're coming from different backgrounds, yeah, they have different networks, oh, yeah, you really learn a lot more, and I think you take a lot more back with you because of those conversations on top of the presentations.
Okay. You know, let's stick on the concept, that, not the concept, but this topic of learning. Just, was it yesterday or was it this morning that I saw a LinkedIn post from the Network Automation Forum about looking into doing some sort of actual formal training and instruction at future events? What's that all about?
Yeah, so it was actually Scott's idea. His brainchild was to have these workshops before the event. And so we did it as early as AutoCon 1. So the second event that was in Amsterdam, we had 2 days of workshops before the event. It was a single track. So we could only have like 50 people in there, because that's about the size of a classroom where it starts to break down if you have more people than that, especially for hands-on labs and that kind of stuff. And then we quickly expanded that to have, again, these, you know, 4 simultaneous sessions in 4 blocks, AM, PM, Monday, AM, PM, Tuesday. So we have 16 potential workshops. And it's, if you buy a workshop ticket, it's choose your own adventure. You get to pick which of the 4 in each time block you want to go to. And the way we're doing that is in partnership mostly with vendors. There's been some other folks who weren't vendors who came and volunteered their time to put together some workshops. And it's been great because, you know, in Austin, we limited it so that each vendor could only do 1 workshop. So you had 16 very different perspectives on network automation. And that's been great. It is inherently because, you know, the folks who have the resources to put on a workshop for 60 people with lab resources for free are mostly vendors. It does skew that direction, right? And so there's a little bit of, you know, you're looking at products and over tools in some ways, right? Mm-hmm. Which isn't the end of the world, but what we want to do is try and add into that mix. You know, maybe we could get somebody to come do a Python for Network Engineers training, which one of the vendors isn't really going to do. It's not really, you know, in you know, what they want to be showcasing. And so there's these, you know, maybe Yang, maybe Jinja. There's a bunch of kind of foundational topics that I think fall outside of what a vendor is going to talk about that we could provide more training to give, especially newcomers, a leg up on network automation and kind of getting into the mix. So right now, as you said, we put out a request for information. We're really just looking at, is this feasible or not? Obviously, if we have to pay trainers, the cost of the workshops will probably go up. So that's something we're taking into consideration. We do try to keep the ticket prices as low as possible so that most people can attend. But we do also think that it, you know, may be worth having even a full 2-day journey of kind of introduction to network automation and really get some foundational topics in there, in addition to what we're already seeing from various vendors and different folks who have ideas to share.
Right.
So at this point, we're just gathering information to see what's possible. And hopefully we can continue to enhance the workshops as we go forward.
Yeah, but it does speak to the heart of what you're trying to do, which is, of course, to build community, but now talking about education and getting folks to advance in their technical knowledge, but also in their ability to advance their project with their manager and get budget and things like that. Because I did hear, I've heard those conversations as well from the main stage too. You know, one of the talks was all about how to secure budget and how to you know, phrase things or put things into terms of like ROI and things like that and the cost benefit. So that's all very real in an operational context. Sure, we want to understand what strings are and variables and all these things and what an Ansible playbook is. But when it comes down to it, it's all just interesting tools and toys that we don't get to use because the budget wasn't approved to run the project.
Exactly right. And I think you're right. I think there is several facets to that initial question, right? Why haven't we seen full adoption of network automation yet? There's a lot of answers. Like many, you know, and I don't know if I want to call it a failure or not, but like many failures, there's almost never one cause. There's a lot of causes. The education piece is addressing the potential skills gap, right? I think in general, my understanding, my experience so far is that there's a lot more network engineers that are really comfortable with network engineering topics than there are that are comfortable with automation topics. And just like on the other side, there's a lot of software developers that have no idea how networking works, right? And so sharing that information to kind of bridge that gap, I think, you know, the education piece really fills that. But to your point, if you're not getting staffed right, if the organization's not structured properly to break down those silos and allow people to work together, If the culture's not right to allow experimentation and failure, if you can't get budget, then those skills don't really matter. And so there's that aspect of it as well. So I think, you know, we're really trying to you know, answer that question or maybe even, you know, fight back against the answers, right? The challenges that have popped up is, you know, how do we address those and help the industry move forward so that we can have bigger, better, more reliable networks? Because I think that does require some form of automation and observability and now maybe even AI.
Yeah, yeah. And, AI, is that something that we're going to talk about today on this podcast? Yes, we are. It's in the notes. But before we do, you know, you mentioned observability just now. You mentioned orchestration. I don't know if you mentioned orchestration, but I was thinking it when you said it. But ultimately, you're talking about education. And, you know, I was a network engineer for many years. So often I wanted to be educated about what the vendors were doing because I was implementing, you know, brand X switch or brand Y, you know, overlay, whatever it happened to be. And so it was important to me to learn what vendors were doing because, again, they had a lot of the resources and were, so they were pushing a lot of the innovation of the day. So it never bothered me because I know other conferences are a little bit different where they really want to downplay any kind of vendor participation. It never bothered me, you know, starting with AutoCon Zero that there were vendors involved. And I think it was handled well in that it wasn't, you know, just these constant vendor sales pitches. It's, hey, this is the technology that we're putting out there right now. Let's show you what it does and how it relates to automation, how you can run your network better. And so that kind of married with what you're doing now with that independent educational voice, I think is really great. Now, how that's going to flesh out, I know, you know, you're still working on that. But another thing that I was thinking is how, you know, when I was walking around just here in AutoCon 4 a couple weeks ago, I noticed it prior, but especially this past one, you know, I noticed vendors that were talking about things that weren't exactly network automation, that they were visibility or observability or, you know, those other things. AI was one of them as well, that, you know, sort of fit into this network automation ecosystem. So, you know, kind of zooming out a little bit, you know, going to an AutoCon and understanding that this all fits into an entire, you know, technology landscape where you're feeding data into your, you know, event-driven automation platform that you built or you bought or whatever it happens to be. So that's something that I notice is that there are, I don't know if you want to call them like automation adjacent technologies that are still very relevant to understand, to learn, you know, both from a technical perspective and also like how does this fit into an architectural landscape as a business owner, right?
Absolutely. And I think there's definitely a little bit of, I mean, we could have a semantic debate here for sure. Luckily, that has never really broken out. But, you know, we called it the Network Automation Forum, which is a forum to talk about network automation.
Yeah.
The event's called AutoCon, which is the automation conference. But, you know, what does network automation mean? And I think part of what we've done over the last 2 years as a community is defined that. And I definitely think, you know, we could have called this the, you know, advancing network operations group or conference, right? I mean, I think this is more holistic and maybe a hat tip to Scott and his kind of Total Network Operations podcast and series of events that he's doing that really kind of looks at that kind of more holistically. How do we kind of combine all of this together and run things in a more similar fashion? This is really about, you know, how do you build and operate the best network possible? And I think that, you know, automation as an umbrella term for orchestration, observability, I think, you know, artificial intelligence in this context is mostly about either gathering data or automating, right? And so, you know, network automation is definitely a bit of a shorthand for all the things you need to, you know, that are beyond just the protocols to really run a network well.
Yeah. So do you believe that AI does fit into, I mean, you just said so, so I guess you do believe
it. I think so. To me, I see AI as another form of automation in this context anyway, right? I mean, that's not like a great definition of AI more broadly, but I think in the context of network operations, AI is another form of automation. Again, in that context of automation being a really broad term that's a little bit nebulous.
Yeah. Well, you know, doing programmatically performing actions, whether that's deriving meaning from data, so data analysis, that's an action, that's doing something programmatically. Whether it's doing that or pushing config or doing other kinds of advanced things, whether there's a large language model involved or not, you know, using the umbrella term, the classic traditional term of AI, I think it does certainly fit into that, especially as you're using those tools as part of that greater workflow, that greater operational kind of ecosystem of how data feeds you know, an alert, which feeds an action, which feeds a visibility, you know, dashboard and, you know, a ticketing system and all these things that link together in real life, right? So network automation as, you know, we've been defining it is more than just a collection of Python scripts in a folder somewhere. It really is this entire thing. So tell me about upcoming events. I know AutoCon 5 is coming up in, was it May or June of next year?
In June, remember. Yeah. I think it's the week of, is it the 6th of June? It's basically the second week in June. I think it's the, I should probably, hold on.
Yeah, you should probably know the dates. I think so. I don't think we're going to edit this part out. We're going to leave this part in.
All right. That's great. I love it. It is the 8th through the 12th is the week, okay. The actual dates of the week, June 8th through 12th. It is in Munich, Germany. So that's what we've kind of done is, if you notice, the even-numbered AutoCons are in the U.S., the odd-numbered AutoCons are in Europe, and so the next one, and in the springtime is also when those happen. So, yeah, June 8th and 9th will be the workshops, and the 10th through the 12th will be the conference in Munich. Yeah, we're really excited.
So are the conferences pretty much the same? I mean, I'm going to assume that they're somewhat different culturally. Obviously, it's a different location, things like that. But do you intend for them to be the same?
Yeah, so far they've been very much the same. So far we've kind of seen it as one continuous event series, and we're learning things at one event and taking them to the next event, regardless of where that event is. We have started to see a little bit of difference between, you know, the type of content that folks in Europe want versus the type of content that folks in the U.S. really? Want. They're fairly minor, but it does seem that, you know, the appetite for more vendor solutions, it seems to be slightly higher in the U.S. I mean, this is a broad generalization.
Sure.
And there's, you know, it seems to be a slightly higher appetite for open source and build it yourself in Europe. And I don't know if that's just a scale of companies question or a cultural thing. I don't know. Also, Europe is a lot of countries. So, again, this is gross oversimplification. But there does seem to be a little bit of difference in what people want to see. So we're starting to take that into account. And there may be slightly more tailored choices, because so far we haven't been really considering where the event is. We just choose the best speakers based on what we know, versus tailoring to the audience, which we may do a little more of going forward.
Okay, yeah. So how are speakers chosen? I already know the answer to this, Chris.
Yeah.
But I want you to tell us. How are speakers chosen? How are workshops chosen? How does that all come together?
Yeah, so both the speakers and the workshops go through we have a call for speakers and a call for workshops that we put out. People throw in their ideas. We collect those up. And then we have an advisory board. So we have 12 folks from the industry. These are all names you would probably know, many of them. All right, if you go to the website and look at the About page, you can see who's on the current advisory board. We're about to kind of refresh that for 2026. But we try to get a mix of folks that are, you know, folks who work at vendors, folks who work at service providers, folks who work at enterprises, folks who work for consultants. Again, this is really kind of this big tent approach we've taken to all the things. And we do that in a microcosm on the advisory board. And then those 12 folks go over the submissions and essentially rank the submissions from, you know, what they think they would like to see and what they think the audience would like to see, right? What's most beneficial to answering these questions and to moving the industry forward. And then we take all those ranks and then from that it shakes out pretty clearly who the top, you know, contenders are. Yeah. And then that's where I take my kind of creative liberty to actually build the agenda and try and order them in a way that makes cognitive sense. I try to build an experience that you're going to kind of journey through as the conference unfolds, but based on that material of the talks that the advisory board has selected and the workshops as well.
And the workshops as well, right. And then I noticed that you're partnered with several other like media companies. And you know, last year I saw the USNUA was involved, Packet Pushers has a presence there. A mechanism to reach more folks, to stay out there in the community, that kind of thing?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So 100%, yes. So at USNUA, actually, last year in 2024, they actually hosted the social event at the Denver AutoCon 2, it was, which was great. And we've done some cross-promotion there. Obviously, what they're doing is really cool, kind of pulling these local user groups together to talk about networking, where folks don't really have to travel. They can just pop over for a happy hour. I think that's amazing. And so we definitely were trying to kind of promote them when they were promoting us. Packet Pushers, definitely, you know, I've known Ethan and Drew for a long time. And having them involved just made a ton of sense, I think. So there's two pieces to that. One, they show up and cover the event. And so if you're watching on LinkedIn, they do these awesome summaries of talks kind of in real time. So you can follow along or catch up afterwards. In addition to that, they're also on-site recording podcasts and things like that, because, again, we've got all these bright minds in one place, so capitalizing on that makes a ton of sense. There's some other podcasters who come and do the same thing, some other industry analysts who come and talk to people there. And then also, we actually provide some packet pushers benefits for our sponsors. So the higher tier sponsors get to do a video with packet pushers and things like that.
Oh, okay.
That also helps kind of boost the value to the sponsors. In addition to the event, they also have these kind of long tail media assets, which I think works out really well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chris, I want to stop here though, because earlier, you know, we focused on education as one of the reasons, not education, but a lack of education, I would say, is one of the reasons that we haven't reached full adoption for network automation yet, right? Folks needed to learn about these other tools and mechanisms, and even that they just exist, let alone like how to do it, right? Is that the only thing? Is there any other conclusion that you've come to as to why we haven't reached full adoption of network automation yet?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's several things. I do think that there is skills is one thing, right? Mm-hmm. And individual learning is one. I do think that in addition to that, some of the lack of skills isn't that there's not information out there. We actually live in a very information-rich time. I mean, when I first learned networking, I think, you know, Google as a search engine was a brand new tool that was kind of exciting. There definitely wasn't a YouTube. There definitely wasn't TikTok. There wasn't, you know, all these courses and things you can get to, all the books that have been written since then. So, you know, we're definitely, you know, if you want to learn this, you can, right? There's people to learn from. There's materials and things like that. One of the things that comes into play there is what I would call an identity crisis. And I've written a little bit about this. We've talked a bit about this in the past. But, you know, there is definitely this, I think, connection of a lot of network engineers to their CLI of choice. And I think, you know, while, you know, Cisco certifications have done great things for the industry and for teaching a lot of people how to do things, if you look at it really clearly, the CCIE is a race to hand jam, you know, manually type configs into a bunch of machines. And so getting a CCIE is great and it does represent a lot of learning. But it's also a test of like marathon pounding the keyboard. And I think because of that, in a lot of ways, we have adopted that as like, that is what it means to be a network engineer, is knowing the CLI commands by heart, knowing, you know, the BGP protocol, you know, steps so that I can troubleshoot things, like really, really being kind of that one man machine, almost a cowboy that can go in there and just ride around and fix things. And that if you attach to that as your identity, then network automation can be very, very scary. And so I think there's a lot of people who are, or have anyway, and I think this is loosening up in a lot of areas, but have refused to learn these skills because it really challenges that sense of identity of what it means to be a network engineer. So I think that's definitely part of what we've done, is kind of socializing that at these events and in these communities. Beyond that, I think that the idea that one person is going to know all the things and be able to automate a, you know, enterprise or service provider scale network is a crazy myth and a crazy idea, right? There's been talk at some AutoCon presentations about Yetis riding unicorns, and this is kind of the expectation there of a one-man show or one-woman show who's going to go in and know Python and Jinja and YAML and BGP and OSPF and, you know, Cisco and Nokia and Arista and Microtik, or, you know, the list is just way too long. And so organizations coming around to the idea that what you really need here is a cross-functional team to be able to run a network. And you don't want these silos, these firewalls between system administrators and security folks and network folks, right? You need to kind of really like break that down. And so I think that there's some cultural stuff there, organizational structure things there that come into it as well. So those are kind of the big three, I think. I think it's, you know, this personal identity stuff that leads to this skills gap. I think there's a lot of cultural things and organizational things. You know, businesses looking at the network as a cost center and not as something that they should invest in is definitely part of the problem. And that's why we've talked about some of these like TCO and ROI conversations. Yeah.
Do you think any of that's starting to change finally? Because, you know, what you're talking about for the most part, these are all people issues. It's not like there's a protocol that's broken or too slow or something like that, or we need a better programming language. I mean, everything that you mentioned there involved people learning stuff and system level changes, which is incredibly difficult to do. So have you seen any improvement?
I think so, absolutely. Yeah. And again, my view is a little bit skewed because, you know, a lot of the time I spend now is in and around the NAF community. And as a community, I think we've definitely all kind of leveled each other up a little bit in thinking about this. The fact that the community continues to grow is a good sign. and it gets referenced outside of this. So I do think there is change happening. There's change afoot for sure. Maybe still slower than we'd like, but that's again part of our mission is to spread this word and have folks involved and have folks know where the resources are to be able to move these things forward. Because I do think, it is, and this is where you know the reality of call it net DevOps comes into play, right? Because DevOps was never about tools; it's about methodology, and that's what we need to understand here for network automation as well. Is the tools are there, right? We don't need to invent new protocols. We don't need to invent new tools. Sure, cool new tools can help make this all simpler, but right now everything's available to build a fully automated network, and it's really about the socio-technical system more than it is about individual technology.
You know, I have always prided myself on coming up with interesting terms. Socio-technical system is one that I have never heard or used before, and I like it. I like it. It makes a lot of sense for the context of what we're talking about today. There is this whole technical world, and then we got this people issue to deal with, and bringing them together, that seems to be what's causing things to be so slow. I mean, it's almost inevitable if you think about it, like trying to change people's hearts and minds, you know? But, you know, I also wonder if we're going to start to see a little uptick in that pace of change, in that rate of change, as folks literally, you know, age out and retire, and you have new folks coming in. And, you know, I talk to engineers that are in their mid-20s, you know, a couple years out of college. It's a very different mindset than what I had for a long time, where I, like you said, my identity was very much entrenched. For me specifically, it was Cisco because I went through that whole certification track, but it was very much entrenched in my ability to memorize syntax and know how to, you know, do stuff on a router and make things work. And to be fair, I needed to know that stuff. You know, I was a VAR engineer for most of my career. I needed to go out there and plug stuff in and very quickly make things work and then get out and go to the next customer. So for sure, I think that I really do think it's inevitable and it's going to be a slow change because of that. But like you said, we're starting to see change. And I think some evidence for that, me personally, is the difference between AutoCon 0 and AutoCon 4. Mm-hmm. Now, this might be intentional or this is organic, I don't know. But at AutoCon 0, it was, I think, a little bit more, maybe a lot more technical in nature with regard to the presentations and the conversations that I heard and things like that. And then at AutoCon 4, that was all there. That element was absolutely there. But I saw the addition of a leadership track, as you mentioned, and also some of the talks from the main stage were about, you know, wrapping this into, you know, how do I marry or how do I align these technical KPIs of my network and of automation, of reducing MTTR and being more efficient, all these things with like business objectives and with money and from the main stage. And so I see this observe this evolution from AutoCon 0 to AutoCon 4, which to me is evidence that it is really much more explicitly trying to address that socio-technical aspect of the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the nice thing is we do have a decade or more of DevOps to kind of steal from, right? They're like, these aren't inherently new problems because we're just applying these methodologies and solutions that have been discovered in other areas to networking. So we have a leg up, I think, right? Where a lot of the kind of the DevOps stuff that started happening really had to build some of this stuff from scratch. Of course, they didn't build it from scratch either. They stole from lean manufacturing and from physical manufacturing world and kind of brought that in. And now we can do that again and kind of steal it again and reuse it again and look at, you know, how to make networks more efficient.
Yeah. It is funny, like when you see a network engineer just recently, like discover GitHub.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's been around for a little while. People have been using this for a little while. But it's still cool. I mean, the fact that folks are discovering these technologies and saying, I can do this more efficiently this way, and I can be more, my version control can be more consistent and effective. That light bulb goes off, so it's pretty neat.
Absolutely.
So, Chris, how can folks learn more about the Network Automation Forum, specifically AutoCon 5 coming up, and, you know, any kind of other information? I know that at some point, the AutoCon 4 videos will be up on your YouTube channel, right?
Yes, at some point. We'll get the slides up on our GitHub pretty soon. The best kind of hub for everything is networkautomation.forum. That's where the website is, and that has links out to the Slack and to the GitHub and to everything else. Definitely, you know, join the Slack. I think that's where like real-time conversations are happening, whether it's about network automation itself or the meta announcements about what's happening with AutoCon and who, you know, where it's going to be, what's going to happen, speakers, tickets going on sale, all that stuff all happens on the Slack. We also have a LinkedIn page you can follow. There's a YouTube channel you should subscribe to. And then when those videos drop, you'll get notified. And there's also a mailing list if you'd rather be informed that way. On the website is where you can find all of this stuff and links to it. So networkautomation.forum is definitely the place to start.
Great. Excellent. So, Chris, thanks so much for joining today. It was a real pleasure. I'm looking forward to talking to you again one day. I'd really like to dig into what your thoughts are around this entire AI phenomenon that we're dealing with, in networking specifically. So I think that's my invitation to you to come back on in the not-too-distant future to dig into that with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. There's definitely a lot to talk about there.
Yep, for sure. So for now, thanks so much to our audience for listening. Bye-bye.